You're listening to Mind Your Own Business. Hi, I'm Scott Sullivan, your host. Mind Your Own Business is a weekly show that we do talking to some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs, helping you to be better at being a business professional by learning from all of the experience that these entrepreneurs and CEOs bring from all around the world. Exclusively here on Inspired News Radio. And now it's time for Mind Your Own Business. Welcome to Mind Your Own Business. This is Scott Sullivan, your host, and I am super excited to be here today with you. I have got a guest that I am so looking forward to having this conversation. A man that I have already just in the last few weeks have learned to admire and respect for the things that he has gone through in his life and the things that he's doing and being able to help people all over the world. It is my pleasure and my honor today to introduce you to Jim Bernard, the owner, CEO, and founder of JWB Sales Consultant. Jim, thank you for being on Mind Your Own Business.
Scott, good morning. Pleasure and an honor. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you so much. So, as longtime listeners know, the way we start off, we always do on Mind Your Own Business is real simple. We always talk about the origin story. We like to go back to that time when, you know, maybe not when you were crawling and in diapers, but we do like to talk about, like, so where your feet got set on this path and how you, where you came from, what was the backstory? So, all the times, the feedback that I get for Mind Your Own Business all the time is that the listeners love to understand what it is that brought this entrepreneur to where they are today. So why don't we just jump right in and tell us a little bit about your origin story or your background and where you came from and how it came to be.
Sure. You know, I look back and, you realize that the older you get, the more you realize that God has really had a hand on your life all this time. But, you know, when you're going through it, it doesn't seem that way. But, you know, I've been in sales for most of my life. I started, my first sales gig, if you will, believe it or not, was at 9 years old. I was selling used shoes at a swap meet in Los Angeles, and that kind of got my feet wet into sales. And then from there, you know, I kind of got a job and in the regular market into like fast food restaurants, and you know, made a buck there for a couple of years. But always knew that sales really was where I was, you know, the most happiest. And then, you know, in my my early teens, I had to lie about my age to work at the mall. My first real paying sales gig was retail, like most of us getting started. It just offered the flexibility around school, and it was fun to meet people at the mall, and of course the girls. When you're young, you get to see a lot of girls, and
yes.
You know what I mean. So it wasn't a bad gig for
us. Mall.
For a 14, 15 year old. But I did. I had to lie about my age to work. I was a hustler. I was a hard worker, and I had to support. Yeah, I mean, I was. I had to support the family at a young age. I know a lot of you guys out there can relate to this. I had to help out my mom, and she was a single parent raising me, which was incredible because now my son's just like me, and I now know what she went through, just pain beyond all recognition. But and then my sister, so she was raising two kids, and so I was able to contribute financially at a young age. At the time, it was horrible. You know, it sucked because I was complaining about giving up half my check to my mom for so many years. But as a grown man now with a family, I look back and go, wow, I had the privilege and honor to help out my mom. At the time, I didn't understand, and it took all these years in my late 40s to kind of realize that, you know, it was an honor. It was a good thing for me to contribute to help my mom, because I know now what she went through raising kids. I've got a wife of 25 years and a mother-in-law that comes in and out sometimes to help, and it's still not enough raising, you know, four kids. And I can't imagine what she went through as a single mom raising two kids. So I did. And then, you know, in retail, I found out, Scott, that retail just wasn't for me. It was really, you know, it was the hours were hard because, you know, you'd start at 1 o'clock and you really couldn't do nothing in the morning. You kind of had to get mentally and physically prepared for work at 1 o'clock, and then you're off by 10 at home by 11 o'clock and your day's already gone and you're in bed and next day you're doing all over again. So retail for me, you know, and then of course the weekends, you had to work on the weekends. You couldn't spend time with the family or barbecue. So I really wanted to get into corporate sales and more of an outside sales position. I knew that's where the money was at for me, or the next natural transition. And then in my late teens, early 20s, I was able to do that. Started off in selling pagers and the big brick phones, cell phones back in the day. You know,
back when we paid $1,000 for a phone that didn't work.
That's right. Let's see. I remember. Let's see. 27 cents off peak, and it was, what was it, 49 cents on peak. Peak hours were 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Off peak, 7 p.m. 7 a.m. I still remember the rates, but it's crazy. But I got my, you know, I cut my teeth in that market, and I did very well. You know, and then years went by. I carried a bag. I sold, you know, cellular phones and pagers, and then went into, after that, I went into telecommunications, and then eventually got into sales leadership. Typically, good salespeople don't make good leaders, and the reason is because top salespeople are very intuitive. And it's very difficult to teach intuition to a sales manager. It's hard. And that's one of the major reasons why a lot of sales managers fail that were the top salespeople, or why top athletes fail as coaches or managers of baseball teams, because what they did was their foundation was intuitive. Of course, they sharpened their skills by practice and the science of it, but it's hard to teach that, or those skills are—they're hard to transfer into somebody else when it's intuition.
We're going to get into that in just a second. Let's before we get to the next phase of your origin story, I want to unpack a couple of things here. First of all, this is fantastic. I'm riveted. I'm sitting on the edge of my seat right now. But I got to ask a couple of questions, because my listeners are going to be tweeting me like crazy right now and want to know about you working as a 9-year-old selling shoes in a swap meet. So let's go back just for a second. Was this a family business? How does a 9-year-old find someone who's going to hire them? And first of all, to have the skill to even be able to do it. So give us just another couple sentences about that experience.
Of all the things, you picked that, huh?
Well, I've got to tell you, I mean, I've heard paper routes, and I've heard, you know, I used to mow lawns, and I've done this, you know, hundreds of times talking to CEOs and founders, and they all have that little kernel of some place in their background where they go, you know, I used to have a paper route, or I sold candy bars or whatever. But this is the first time out of all of my shows I've ever had anybody say, I'm 9 years old and I'm selling used shoes. Now, I got to hear just a couple more sentences. Come on.
That's right. Yeah, used shoes, and it was a pretty good business. But I got that job. My mother was a maid. She cleaned motel rooms. The worst job I've ever had in my life. I did that from 9 to 11. We used to walk, and I kid you not, it sounds like a cliche, but it's not. Let's see. we live in Long Beach, and I had to walk to Bellflower. So that walk one way was probably a good at least 3 miles, maybe more like 4 or 5. And, you know, round trip was 6 to 10 miles. So we walked to that job, and I helped my mom, you know, clean up motel rooms for a couple of years. But the owner was the one that gave me the gig. He his mother ran the motel. Yeah, her son, the manager, her name was Shusa Lee, sweetheart of a lady. She was a Chinese of Chinese descent. She was a great lady. But her son gave me the gig at the swap meet, and I kind of, you know, I wanted a way to make extra money on the side, and you know, that was really kind of how I got into the swap meet gig. I did it for, I think, a couple of summers, but really, you know, I liked selling, and I liked working with people.
Yeah,
and
you were cutting your teeth on. At 9 years old, you were learning what it's like to overcome an objection. And so I'm going to tell you a brief story. So if you ever go to New Orleans, there's always these young men that are on the street of New Orleans, and they're always, you know, out hustling, and I love that. I love it, and I fall for all of them because I just love the hustle they have. And it says, you know, and the young man walks up and he says, "I can tell you where you got those shoes, and for a dollar." And I say, "What?" And he says, "I can tell you where you got those shoes for a dollar." And I said, "Okay, here's a dollar." He says, "You got those shoes on your feet." So, yeah, so, but that's what I see when I think of a 9-year-old selling shoes at a swap meet. I think of this, you know, how do you say no to a 9-year-old who looks up at you with those big eyes and goes, "Oh, come on, don't you want a pair of shoes?" So,
that's right.
So that's fantastic. But then, now when we left our hero, he was selling in the telecom industry, and you were telling us you were about to kind of open up just a little bit, and that's where I want to go with this, because now you said something also that I thought was really interesting, and that, you know, good salespeople sometimes don't make great managers because, and you use the word intuition, because that intuitiveness that they had, you know, as a salesperson, as an individual contributor, to use the vernacular we talk about today, all of a sudden when you get into this, you know, this coaching scenario or the managing scenario, it's hard to teach that intuition. So I understand what you're saying and I agree with you, but I'm sure that there's a lot of other words we could stick in there for intuition. Is maybe, you know, some people talk about raw skill or talent or inherent ability, and there's all kinds, but are those interchangeable words with what you're saying about intuition?
Absolutely. I think an inherent skill set is really applicable too. So it's really, it's the predisposition of something that attracts somebody. I mean, you know, I was just listening to Derek Jeter last night, and he's now the manager or the CEO of the Marlins. And here's a great player he's struggling. His team is struggling, and it could be for no, and I don't know why specifically, but you know, that kind of goes back to great player, but he's having his challenges as a leader. It's a whole different ball game, but I think that everybody that has been great, I'm talking about at the top of their game and mastered the fundamentals of the thing, and then so much so that they were able to actually change the rules of the game. There was inherently something that they were born with that predisposed them to a certain field. And I think that when you couple that with practice and the science of the thing, you get the greats. Can somebody be really good at a certain subject without it being inherently embedded? I think so. If you master the fundamentals of a thing, you can. But to be truly great, Steve Jobs, Derek Jeter's, the Michael Jordans, you know, the Jim Bernards. I think there's a natural inherent predisposition that one has that they understand what it is and they move towards that particular marketplace.
Yeah, so there's a book that you and I have talked about many times. We both agree, I think, when I say that readers are leaders and leaders are readers. So one of the things that we talked about in one of our other calls that we've had, and that is that there's a if you took the two individuals and you gave them exactly the same training, the person who was had the predisposed ability or had a little bit of that natural talent, as we say, would by far exceed the person who didn't. So if you take somebody who's a natural pianist at, with somebody who's never, doesn't even have a natural talent for playing the piano, and you gave them exactly the same talent, they would not be at the same place at the end of that training. Right? So that's, I think that's, one of the things that is extremely fundamental, that you can teach somebody to play the piano, but can you teach somebody to be a virtuoso? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I mean, some of that has to be, given, some of that has to be inherent in the human being. I agree with you. That's fantastic. Okay,
Right.
so now we have moved into, so thank you, first of all, for telling us a little bit about their background. I mean, first of all, I don't want to say that it's the same, but it's a very similar story. When I talk to the CEOs and founders of these companies that are all have been extremely successful, 90% of them come from a place where it's a pretty humble beginning. I mean, and I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about upper middle class. I'm talking about there's this pattern that I'm following, that I'm seeing happen, is that there are, either lower middle class or lower, in the socioeconomic scale of things, because there was a struggle, and that struggle was like, iron sharpens iron, or whatever the terminology, because there's that now that desire and that drive that is born, that has been developed at a very early age, that gets carried on. So now you are moving into the next phase of your career where you are a player coach and a coach. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, it's evolved. I moved up the ranks in sales, and I look back, and I never really decided to stay in sales. But you look back, and 10, 15 years have passed you by, and you kind of, like we were talking about earlier, Scott, is I made a good living, and I realized that the money was really, really good. But then I realized that getting into leadership, I was able to really help people become better than they were the previous day or the previous week or the previous month, and that really was a good feeling for me to be a part of that evolution for somebody, and to teach them a skill set that they can monetize. It was rewarding for me. So I really, I got into it for the money, but I stayed for the people. And I then realized that, companies don't grow, people grow within the companies. And, if I can grow people, I can grow companies, irregardless of the industry or the marketplace or the economy, because really it's about people that make the difference. And so my motto at our consulting company is that we put people first and process second. And right now, most companies are just the opposite. They say they do, but at the end of the day, it's about the buck. And we're moving from the knowledge economy, where it's artificial intelligence and machine to machine learning, into the wisdom economy, where everything now is kind of co-creation. It's one organism. It's all full transparency, and we're working together. We're mimicking nature in this new knowledge economy, and that's really what I believed in all along. I think that people are the business. It's not the money. And really, when you work with them and help them grow, it's a domino effect. It really affects the entire organization as a whole. So, I love that. I love that I could help people. I love that there are a lot of people that are resistant to change also, because it sharpens my skills in conflict management, and it makes me tougher as a consultant and as a teacher, because they keep me sharp. It's the guys and gals that challenge, my you know, my support or my expertise, and that's okay too. But you know, it's people collectively that really make the success of an organization, and I really believe that. And sales is universal. People want more sales around the world, so it's a good field to be into, and I get to help people in the process. So, you know, I moved up the ladder. I went from, you know, manager, entry-level, you know, frontline management to director, where I'm starting to really kind of, you know, widen my footprint in terms of responsibility, regional offices under my belt, more people. I got into, you know, triple digits in terms of direct and indirect reports. Then I went into a vice president position for a few years, managing a major P&L, and then I had to learn to manage from a distance. I had to learn to manage leaders. They know all the tricks, you know? And so, you know, managing managers was different than managing salespeople or managing the HR department or customer service. Different sectors within the organization was a challenge for me as well. But it made me stronger and better, you know? So, from there, you know, I had aspirations of becoming a C-level executive, a COO, or eventually CEO. But you know, I just never really caught on to the politics of the corporate world. It's a whole different world. You've got to be able to really kind of navigate your way through the politics and know how to communicate effectively and play that game. And I was never really good at it. You know, I wore my feelings on my shirt cuffs, and I said what I meant, and I did what I meant and said, and somehow that's lost in business today. You know, it's like running for political office, especially at a VP or C-level position. So it wasn't for me. I didn't like the politics involved with, you know, it was a constant chess match. I work with very intelligent people. Men and women I felt like every time I'd talk with them or meet with them, especially behind closed doors, there was a chess match, and it just like got exhausting.
Yes.
To try to outthink your opponent, you know. And I said, this is just, it's hard. So, you know, I kind of evolved into a consulting business where I was able to really work with CEOs and owners of small and medium sized companies and even large companies. But not really needed to be involved with the day-to-day politics of an organization. So it was, I had the best of both worlds. The challenge with running your own company is you got to keep the lights on and the prospects flowing.
That's true. You're everything. You're everything when you first start off. Yeah. We have a saying around here. You can always tell the owner, he's the one that's taking out the trash at night. So,
well, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, it sounds like, first of all, that your comments you just made made me feel like that you want to be closer to the people. So your problem or the challenge you were facing is that by moving up into the ranks, you were also separating yourself from where you had that most affinity. And that was, you know, at the people level, helping people. Because I heard you say already three or four times that what you really felt good about was the fact that you could help people get better than they were last week, last month, last year, etc. So you mentioned people several times. So to me, it's outsider looking in now, it seems very intuitive that the C-level wouldn't be the right level for you because, you know, you're being separated from that where you're getting that positive feedback or that positive emotion. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, it's pretty true. I would, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, men and women that are in a C-level position don't care about the people beneath them, because
I didn't say that. Yes, I agree.
Yeah,
I was using you as an example just from your words, right? So from what you were saying to me.
Yeah, sure. That's a fair assumption. The higher up I went, the more distant I felt from really what made me happy was really being with, you know, really the core or the heart of the company, which is sales. And I missed that. So I met some good people along the way, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I did. That distance that I had created for myself was pretty wide, and I just really longed to be back on the front line and really helping organizations grow and working with the sales team firsthand. But I've also met a lot of good CEOs and owners of companies that really want to make a difference, and they walk the walk, and it's refreshing to see that. There are companies out there that really want to make a difference, not just the bottom line, because again, that's why we're in business, but also to impact their community and the earth. They want to give back to not just the community, but really make a difference with a lot of the resources of the earth, recycling and solar and
That's
things of
great.
that nature. So it's nice to have and work with people that care about tomorrow as well as today.
So tell us about some of the folks that are in your past as you were as you transitioned from telecom sales to owning your own company and moving through that transition. Talk to us a little bit about your influencers. Who are the people that you leaned on? What are the things, the events in your life, or that helped to mold you into the man that you became?
Sure. I gotta start off by really recognizing my mother and my grandmother. They were strong women that really, now I realize that, but when I was a young kid, I didn't realize that, of course, like most young kids who think that their mom and dad are in the way. But you look back and God bless them. They sacrificed a lot for our lives and to help us become better. So I'm trying to do the best I can with the life that I've been given, my sister also was a big part of who I am today. She passed away young, and I learned a lot from her as well. My grandmother, God bless her, she really instilled a lot of, and my mother too, a lot of my spirituality and my beliefs, which is my foundation to everything that I believe in. And then growing up, I had a handful of good leaders, good sales managers, good leaders. I worked for Nordstrom for a couple of years, and I worked for a couple of good leaders there. I was fortunate. I remember, I forgot his last name, but it was in the early 80s. His name was Paul. He was one of our managers at Nordstrom, and he took me aside and he said, "Jim," he was disciplining me about something. I forget what it was. But he started off with really kind of stroking my ego, starting off with something nice about me, which kind of put my wall down. And then he kind of followed up with the issue at hand, which I thought was clever. I kind of caught that at the end of that discussion, and I never forgot that tactic where you if you want to discipline somebody, it's good to start off with something positive. And he was very genuine about it. It wasn't something that was seemed to be set up or phony. It was very believable. So I learned, along the way. I had some good teachers along the way. I had a couple of guys that, ever had those guys that when they walk into a room, they command attention. They just reflect confidence and they give off energy and they don't suck it up, and they're just master communicators. And I had a couple of guys like that in my life that I really wanted to emulate. And I realized early on that if you're going to be successful, you have to have the ability to effectively communicate with other people. And it's inevitably working with and through other people that you become successful. You hear the old saying that he was a self-made millionaire. Nobody's self-made, in my opinion. It's you got to work with or through somebody else. And if you can do that and effectively communicate your vision, that's worth as much or more than a Harvard degree. It really is. And so I kind of picked up on that along the way, and I've learned those skills and I'm still honing those skills, but that really served me well in sales. And
That's excellent. Yeah.
So, and then other people along the way, like I've had a couple of good friends, you know, Tom Mullins, Pete Uretta, some good guys out there that really supported me along the way and put up with all my crap. You know, Tom, I've known since I was 12 years old. So I've been fortunate to have few friends, but, you know, but quality friends for a long time. And then, you know, I really admired people in history. Abraham Lincoln, I know it's a lot of people think the same way that I do. And it's kind of cliche to say him, mention him, but Winston Churchill, another one, you know, these men, John F. Kennedy, what I love about them is that they were able to, and this is a defining moment for me with these men, in that they were able to make difficult decisions in the midst of a very difficult time, knowing full well that these decisions are going to impact the people in a negative way. But they did it because they wanted to secure a better future for the next generation. And that to me is we call that managerial or leadership courage. And that's something that I think is rare nowadays. The leaders we have in place, especially in America, do it for political gain or power or money. It's difficult to find someone like that nowadays, where, especially in you know, very tumultuous times where they still lead with just an inherent, almost a divine guidance that they carry through in spite of their circumstances. And that to me, as a father and as a husband with a sick wife, I can relate to that. And I really admire that. And that's inspiring.
Wow, that is so I agree with you. Those there's a lot to be learned from, you know, the men of history and the women of history that had to make some really, really just decisions that, you know, when, you know, I get in a situation and I have to make a decision about, you know, which bill I pay because I only have enough money to pay one and I need to pay two, or I have, you know, to decide where I'm going to eat lunch. You know, those are not life and death decisions. And these guys were facing decisions that were literally could mean life and death for more than one person, for a lot of people, because they were putting, you know, men and women in harm's way. And there was a lot. So I agree with that. So the phrase you used was managerial courage. I'm going to repeat that because that was great. That's a great nugget. So this has been fantastic, Jim. I really, really appreciate the information that you've been sharing with us. So now what I'd like to do is I'd like to jump ahead to today. Where are we today? I'd like to talk a little bit about in detail, what does JWB Sales Consulting actually do? What is how can our listeners out there today interact with you, and or how can we be a resource for you? I mean, what, so just kind of start from, you founded JWB and what it is that you're doing currently, where you think the business is going to evolve to, and how can the listeners be a resource for you today?
Sure. Well, here at JWB Sales Consulting, we help companies increase sales. You know, whether it's a small mom and pop shop or a medium sized company with regional offices or a Fortune 1000, sales is sales and people are people. I haven't met a sales issue that I haven't heard before. It's all the same. Right now, what's changed now is we have access to more information faster. But other than that, It's the same challenges that most companies face. We need more sales. We need to be cost effective and increase productivity and efficiency. You know, for mom and pop, it's really, you know, how much is it and what does it do? And I can tailor a proposal that fits their needs. For mid-level guys out there in the regional offices and the medium companies, it's really their hot buttons is, you know, we want increased efficiency and productivity with what we've got now. And then, you know, your Fortune 1000 companies and your CEOs, their main concern is really Jim, how can you help me increase shareholder equity? In other words, how can you make my company more valuable? And so sales relates to all three of those components, and we partner with these companies both short and long term to help them increase sales, whether it's training their sales team, getting rid of some of the people that need to be let go, or maybe reassigned to different seats on the bus, building on that training, or even just creating and building a brand new sales team altogether. We also specialize in sales leadership, frontline managers, VPs, C-level as well. We train them on how to effectively manage and lead and measure effective sales teams. I say effective, not just any sales teams, but effective sales teams that are meeting and exceeding quota. Really from soup to nuts, we help them increase their sales in every area of the company. But what makes us different is that we bring sales up to date. Sales, for the most part, in every company that I've consulted with and worked for, is still utilizing 50-year-old technology. In other words, sales has not evolved in the last 50 years. They expect the salesperson to, hunt and door knock and develop business and then qualify them and then, present, pitch, and close, and then maintain via customer service all through one person. And that doesn't work nowadays. Every other company has applied what I call the division of labor: operations, procurement, accounting, marketing. They've all applied division of labor. In other words, they've employed different people for different segments of their job, but sales is not. And so what I teach is, by applying the division of labor in sales, you're a lot more efficient. You can do a lot more with a lot less by evolving sales in this new division of labor. It's actually not new, it's old, but sales hasn't caught on yet. So I implement that process and with phenomenal results. I also talk about really moving sales from the outside to the inside. I think that the new generation going into the wisdom economy, our new next economy, is really going to be an inside sales job. I think inside sales has been misused and underperformed. I think that inside sales is really going to be applicable for most organizations if done correctly. I bring new twists, some old ideologies that work very, very well. I bring sales up into this century. It's been effective. And so, we have a quantifiable value proposition that really demonstrates a quantifiable ROI.
Can you elaborate? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. So can you elaborate a little bit on the inside sales model you were talking about? Because you kind of glossed over that, and I was very intrigued. What when you say you think that the inside sales model is going to be applicable to a lot more companies, does that mean, are you talking about like Telefonic, where somebody, there's a call center type of sales, or what? Can you just unpack that a little bit? Just open that up a little bit and tell us what your vision around that is.
Sure. So, most companies, when they have a sales department, they either have a combination of inside sales and outside sales, or predominantly outside sales. The fact of the matter is that moving into the new economy, which is, again, the wisdom economy, I keep saying that because it's so important to understand where we're moving into, in that, most customers don't want to see a salesperson face to face. They just don't. They don't want to be sold to. They don't have the time to meet with somebody. They just don't like meeting with salespeople unless they absolutely have to. So what we found to be efficient and productive is by conducting that business over the phone. First of all, the majority of sales in an organization is really from repeat business. In other words, their existing customer base gives them a lot of their new sales. When you compare that to outside sales, new growth, the difference is night and day. So the majority of sales that a company is generating is coming from their existing customer base already. So an inside sales team that really will exploit that avenue is going to be a lot more efficient, first of all. That's step one. Step two is, yeah, I can actually talk to a customer over the phone, and they prefer it that way for everything. I can business, I can hunt over the phone. In other words, I can get a list, and I can start to cold call different companies. In fact, we teach that we don't cold call from inside sales. What we do is we send pre-approach emails first, and then a follow-up call on that pre-approach email, which makes that initial first call really a warm call. So we can, whatever an outside salesperson can do, an inside salesperson can do a lot more efficiently. They can make, 20, 30, 40, 100 calls in a day, whereas an outside salesperson can only make maybe 3 or 4 or 5 new appointments in a day at best. So it's a lot more efficient on the inside than it is on the outside. And then, we hand off, and we revamp that. So, they're going to be pitching and closing over the phone, inside sales, but everything else, add-on business and proposals and customer service, that gets handed off to somebody else. Again, applying the divisions of labor. So everybody has a job responsibility, including human resources and the CEO and marketing and operations, because sales is should be executed in a collective fashion. It's not just reserved for the sales department. To truly break ground in sales and really take care of your customer and set new records, the entire organization needs to own some part of the sales process, including human resources, customer service, deployment, operations. Yeah. So I get everybody involved. And so, picture it this way, Scott. Right now, I'm going to give you a visual. So right now, and I tell this to my CEOs as well, you picture a typical organization as rowboats. And let's say you've got operations and marketing and sales and human resources and deployment, whatever the departments are, that person is in their own rowboat. And of course, the finish line is, a new record of sales they want to get to, say in Q1 or Q2. They set a record of X amount of dollars in sales in Q1. So that's the finish line. So the objective in that rowboat, if you're in that rowboat and your respective department, especially sales, is to get to that finish line as fast as you can by rowing as fast as you can. And that's really how sales is ran today. Everybody's in their own rowboat, trying to get to the cross the finish line as fast as they can. So what I do is I take everybody out of the rowboats. I discard all the rowboats except one. I put everybody from customer service to HR to operations and sales, everybody in one rowboat, okay? So we put them in one rowboat. But the problem now becomes you put everybody in one rowboat, give them a set of oars, what's going to happen is that they're going to be rowing as fast as they possibly can, but all they're going to accomplish is a lot of splashing of water and going around in circles. They're going to get nowhere fast. So the next step is to make sure that they're all in the same rowboat and just one rowboat, but now they have to row in sync. That's the key. Get everybody in one rowboat and then have them row in sync. And that's where I come in my consulting firm, is that we get everybody to own a certain part of sales and then row in sync. How do we do that? Well, we make sure that we don't operate in silos. We're all in one rowboat. And because we're all in one rowboat, communication is immediate, you see, and it's seamless. So now we're rowing in sync, you see. So that's mm-hmm. really, and then now we get to the finish line, 10 times as fast as if we would separately. So that's kind of like the visual.
And not everybody's tired. Not everybody, and not everybody's tired because you've been dividing it up into shared labor, and nobody has to do all the work themselves. Because if you have 10 rowboats, you've got it. 10 people have to get across the finish line. I see. This is great. It's a great visual.
That's
Thank you
right.
very much. I
That's right.
appreciate that.
And you only have to row as fast as the slowest guy on the team. So, it's a collective effort. So it really is, again, it's one organism moving together in sync, which is key.
That's fantastic. So now let's tell the listeners now how they can get a hold of you. Where is the best way and what's the best methodology to get a hold of JWB Sales Consulting and get a hold of Jim Bernard? And also then tell us in just the last 30 seconds or so of our interview here, tell us what the listeners can do to be a resource for you. And what is it that if you have a Twitter account, if you have a LinkedIn, how is the best way to get a hold of you?
Sure, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm under Jim Bernard, like the dog, B as in boy, ER, N as in Nancy, ERD. But they can reach me via email for any questions regarding sales. I do the first hour is free, and what that allows the prospective customer to do is to really kind of get a feel of what I can offer and to decide if they're going to hire me or not. So. What I typically do is I get their concerns and I'll submit to them a proposal in a summary format back to them on solutions that addresses their concerns. And then based on that proposal, they can decide if they want to hire me or not. So they're going to get something irregardless. But they can get a hold of me via email, which is the best way. It's jimwbernard@gmail.com. It's Jim W as in William, Jim W Bernard, like the dog, at gmail.com. And I'm on LinkedIn. I publish articles there and posts every single day on some type of either sales leadership or sales technique. So if they want to go over my LinkedIn profile and go over all my posts, there's a plethora of knowledge on there
There is.
about
I will attest to that. I want to be a testimony. You and I are connected on LinkedIn, and I read your stuff. And from our last conversation, I went back and read a couple of your sort of micro articles, and they are fantastic. Some great. I love what you've talked about today. The wisdom economy. I love that. The new, bringing technology and bringing the sales organization to the 21st century. I love that. So there's a lot of good stuff on LinkedIn. So Jim W. Bernard at gmail.com. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And so you asked me how the listeners can help me. The next thing for our consulting company, Scott, is really going to be, I really want to give back. It's a big thing on my heart in that. Oh, and by the way, I employ some great guys that work with me. I'm actually working with some guys that I've worked with for over 30 years, and also just we're working on some great things. I don't want to spoil the surprises yet, but what I want to do is really anybody out there that really has connections with like a prison ministry or a homeless industry, or right now we're trying to work with ex-athletes. And what I'm trying to do with these opportunities is really kind of help these people either get back into the marketplace with a new skill set, which is sales, or sometimes athletes they've made it big and they've lost it all for a number of reasons, and they don't have any skill sets other than their professional athletic ability. And so what I'd like to do is kind of train them in sales and get them back out there and making some good money. So I want to teach prisoners that are coming out of prison. I want to teach ex-athletes that need a new skill set, or even homeless people out there that need a second, third, or fourth, or fifth chance and to get back into the marketplace. And so the future for our company is really giving back to the community and really teaching people that need a new skill set, that don't have the means to go to school and get a degree, but are hungry. They want to know how to make some decent money and learn a skill set. And I got to tell you, sales has just been that avenue for me, and it's fun, and you can make some really good money in sales. So I want to be able to reach out to those you know, those segments of the marketplace and give back as much as I can.
That's
So if anybody
fantastic.
knows any outreaches I can get a hold of or have them call me, I'd love to partner with them and help them get back into society.
And we will post all this information up on Mind Your Own Business on a weekly basis. I want to thank from the bottom of my heart, Jim Bernard today from the owner and founder of JWB Sales Consulting. What an absolute fabulous hour that we have spent together. I just can't believe the hour has already flown by. This is fantastic. Great, great information. I'll put a small summary together on our show archive, and we will continue to look for and help you find the outreach ministries that you talked about. That is fantastic. I'll make sure that information all gets out. A lot of my followers are on Twitter.
Jim Bosells, JimBosells.
Okay, so at Jim Bosells. Mine is, of course, at Sales with Sully. So honored to have at Jim Bosells is the Twitter account. And don't forget to put the hashtag of Mind Your Own Business, hashtag Mind Your Own Business. If you have any questions or comments, team tracks that all the time, and we'll pass those on to Jim. Jim, thank you from the bottom of my heart today for being a guest on our Mind Your Own Business, and I really, really appreciate your time today. So we're going to have we have another gentleman that works at our station here, and he does what's called Wisdom for Wednesday, and I'm going to connect you two because with the wisdom economy, it seems to play right in to Wisdoms for Wednesday. So thank you again. I appreciate it. My guest today has been Jim Bernard from JWB Sales Consulting, and you're listening to Mind Your Own Business with your host, Scott Sullivan. Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Mind Your Own Business right here on InspiredNewsRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in each week as we interview some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs of the world. Reach us on Twitter at INR Talk Radio. Always use the hashtag MYOB for Mind Your Own Business. Make sure you stop by and check out all of the past episodes and all the great things that are available on our website, www.inspirednewsradio.com. There's great resources there that you can find for all of our other shows, too. Thanks for being a part of the Inspired News Radio family. Until next week, remember to mind your own business.